And welcome to the Grace Hour Show. It's that time again. This Christian program coming to you from Greater Grace Church in Baltimore. We're going to address some topics, some things that might be challenging your faith. We want you to live in a biblical orientation. So that's why that's where we take our cues. So I'm Pastor Steve Androlonis, one of the pastors here at Greater Grace Church. With me is Pastor Barry Quirk. And we'll be talking about, this week we're talking about lies people believe about the Bible. And our two lies, or two, whatever, I don't know, two misconceptions, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. God is angry with me and he wants to punish me. Does the Bible fuel that kind of attitude? And then the other one is maybe a contradiction to that. God is only a loving God and never judges or corrects me. So we're going to address both of those points today in the best way that we can, right?
Yeah.
We have limited knowledge. We are not all powerful, but we do have some thoughts about these kinds of things. Yeah. Lie, our first lie that some people believe, God is an angry God, and he's angry with me, and he only wants to punish me. What do you think, Pastor Barry?
Well, I think if that were really the case, he could get it over with in a heartbeat, right? One quick swell, hammer, and we're done. And then the other thing would be to say, if he doesn't want to do it quickly, but he wants to draw it out, then he's really... You know, what is his motive? And I think, honestly, there's a couple – this word motive is kind of important to me, because why is that lie even prevalent, number one?
Exactly.
Is it that somebody who believes that God is angry with me and only wants to punish me, you know, is this one of those mystery of iniquity things where they say, let's misjudge the character of God and express it, because therefore I won't have to be accountable to follow – the truth that God really would like to deal with me in a way that brings me back to himself, right? Mm-hmm. This is the peaceable fruits of righteousness, and not him just looking to hammer us.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it's, you know, when we read through the Bible, we see the people in the Bible. We don't see, of course, you know, we could talk about the flood, like people's imaginations are only evil continually. There's a bigger element there in terms of like bloodshed on the earth and that kind of thing. So God did trigger a reaction from God. But I think we notice in every situation with God the heart of grief. God, yes, it says God is angry with the wicked every day. But then it also says that in Ezekiel, a couple places, that God does not, you know, God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. So if you are holding on to this kind of conception of God as an angry God, this is, I think, really goes back to, you know, the roots of Western civilization and the Greek mindsets and the very humanistic, human anthropomorphic kind of gods and goddesses that were very much had human characteristics on steroids. And so they would blow a gasket, and they would do things like throw lightning bolts, or, you know, turn people to stone and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of like, if that's still lingering in your cultural conscience, then you're going to think of God as sitting on Mount Olympus and looking for ways to rectify things with power rather than love.
Yeah. I think this important, the theme of knowing the full counsel of God is important, right? Because, you know, are there things that anger God? Well, being separated from his Father was very troubling to him. For us to be separated from him is very troubling. And, you know, we talked a little before we went on the air, and this, you know, this point about punishment versus chastisement is an important one, right? Like, God chastens those whom he loves, right? It's he doesn't punish us because he hates us. It's the exact opposite, that he looks at us and he sees us in our failure, and he says, you know, 1 John chapter 1, he says, you know, that I have this great love towards you. I looked and I saw you. Behold, what manner of love the Father has given unto us, that he has called us the sons of God. Like, he looks at us, sees us in our most horrific moments, and he's troubled not by who we are. He knows who we are. You know, he created us. He expects us to fail. But he's troubled that there's sin that's separating our relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And that's bothersome to him, because he would love to have our fellowship. But we have to know the full counsel of God, because we could walk in one of two ends of this. We could say, you know, God is only out to get me, and he's angry at me, and there's all these things. Or we could say the opposite, which is, I can do whatever I want. God is just a God of love and will never get upset at anything I do. And I think both of those have some room for correction and understanding to take place, so that we can know the full counsel of God.
Yeah, that's, the full counsel of God. I think we think about Galatians 6 and the law of reaping and sowing. God is not mocked.
Yes.
Whatsoever a man sows, he shall also reap. If he sows to the flesh, he shall reap corruption.
Yep.
If he sows to the spirit, he has an abundant life. Mm. It's like put right there. I'm reading through Exodus in my Bible reading, and I'm at that point where God is like, the Israelites have been rescued. They've been delivered. But they've already started to murmur, one about water, one about food. And now, you know, God has given them instructions, and he's, you know, saying, if you choose to live this way, this is the way things are going to be. Mm. But if you choose not to live this way, and they agree, oh, we will do everything that you say. Okay, there we go. We have an understanding there. And so, that's, you know, the chastisement idea of being corrected, God allowing us to sort of to experience the consequences of a violation of truth is a correcting element. Reproof and correction are the way of life, that proverb says. So I think reproof, I always like that word, because it means that God has said something and he's going to be true to it. And if you you know, I know you've read Ezekiel, but I think I've gone through Ezekiel a couple of times, and a couple of times I started realizing that there was a phrase in there. I started underlining it, that they may know that I am the Lord, that they may know that I am the Lord.
Yes.
And it's like everything that happens in terms of judgment, in terms of the chastisement has happened, is that they may know the Lord.
Yes.
Is God true to his word or not?
Right. Absolutely. And if God's not concrete, if God's not absolute, if God is wavering in his authority, if he is temperamental in his authority, if he's sentimental in his authority,
that's true.
How do we have an existence in our life, right? But we know who God is. The character and nature of God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And, you know, we know that God, there is no such word as love without God.
That's right.
Right? There's no such word as love. But love cares. And when we have a baby and the baby is, you know, toddling towards the wood stove and wants to put its hand on the wood stove, we don't just say, oh, I've created it and, you know, it's okay. Just burn your hand off. You know, there is an instruction.
That's and that, love.
And maybe that instruction's ignored, and maybe there's a consequence, and maybe there's a penalty for that. But all of it's so that we won't put our hand on the wood stove, right? Yeah. It's all a consequence of, and I like this about our, you don't have chastisement without free volition, right?
That's true.
If God says to us, I got, here's the issues of life and death, good and evil. Let me give you a little hint. Choose life.
Yeah.
Because in life, there's no chastisement. There's only the fruits of righteousness and the reward of peace and mercy and all these things. But, go for it. You have to make a decision. And then the consequences of those decisions are what we did, not what God's anger has poured out on us.
Is God angry with me? So, I mean, God wants his will to be fulfilled. That's the ultimate kind of thing. And just when we look at the Bible, we can look at the characters, these characters, like, you know, we got to look at all the characters, and two in particular that we meet early in the Bible. are Cain and Hagar, both of whom seem to be like they would be outside the privilege of the presence of God. You know, Cain, for obvious reasons, he killed his brother.
Yeah.
Hagar, because she despised her mistress and she was like, you know, and, you know, she was a part of this, well, whatever you want to, you know, that's a complicated story. Yeah. But anyway, in both situations, we see that God comes to meet Cain, you know, just as he came to meet Adam when he ate, but this is a bigger issue. Murder's a bigger issue than eating from the tree. And God had a discussion with Cain. And, you know, Cain said, you know, my punishment is too much for me to bear. He said, it's all right. I'm going to make sure that people look at you and I'm going to seal you in a certain way, mark you in a certain way, so people know that if they kill you, they're doing something against my justice, not yours. So was God angry with Cain? Yes. You know, the big telling moment there is God has come to meet Cain, and then Cain, rather than staying in the presence of God, it says he went out of the presence of God to the east of Eden and started his own society. So, you know, there's a lot of theological implications, but I think the big element there is, you know, even though Cain did something egregious, even though the blood of Abel was speaking to God, even though the earth was going to be like more difficult for him to cultivate because of what he did, God still met him. So God was willing. Same thing with Hagar. We see this is the first place in the Bible where we see this term, the angel of the Lord, and it's Hagar who gets the first visit. It's like, you know, we would say, well, was God angry at Hagar? Hagar was like sort of a pawn in the plan of Sarah. Yeah. And then, you know, yeah, she did, you know, she did feel high and mighty because she got pregnant and Sarah couldn't, you know, both very pretty women, but, you know, yes, only one got pregnant.
Right.
But God met her too. So I just think of those two people. And like, if we're going to have a concept of God as being angry, then why wouldn't he have just flicked Cain out into oblivion? You know,
immediately, right? He could have dealt with him immediately and said, this is contrary to who I am. You're done.
Yeah.
The whole story of redemption of man is a story about God giving us this paradise, us really messing it up very, very badly.
Yeah.
And then walking in an opportunity for redemption and restoration throughout. And at the end, when we're in the presence of God face to face, it's going to be a story of mercy. It's not going to be a story of anger.
Yeah.
Right. And I love this principle that like his mercies are brand new every day. And it's this kind of catch 22 in a sense, or juxtaposed thoughts that, you know, his mercies are brand new every day. I'm complete in him, right? I'm complete in him. Yet reality says, I don't know anything as I ought to. I'm growing in grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ. Who I am in my experience is drawing closer to God, hopefully, right? We're learning the things of God. We're walking, experience failure. All these things teach us a lesson. On the other hand, in his finished work, we're complete in him, right? Mm-hmm. So God has this anger that's in the earth. And I wonder, and I was kind of jotted some things down about this. I wonder if we tend to evaluate God's disposition towards us based on how we feel, what level of comfort we feel, right?
Sure. So right.
If I feel good, oh, God's happy with me. If I feel bad, oh, God has displeasure with me. And this is the Greeks. This is all those situations. But the reality is God doesn't change. I do. Mm-hmm. Right. So my feelings aren't going to dictate how God looks towards me. Yeah. My understanding, my feelings, my emotions, all these things, when I think with my emotions, you know, emotions can't think on their own. I give them a thought, they respond. That's what happens. So man has this way. So when things go wrong, oh, God's punishing me. But if things are going well, then, oh, God is with me. And, you know, God can be with me in a very difficult time, in a way that's leading me through that difficult time. And it's not in a way that man understands, but it's in a way that God initiates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am the Lord, I change not. That's a verse somewhere.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I'm hearing it in my head.
Yes.
So you know, the thing is, you're right. You encapsulated that pretty well. We change. And, you know, to bring another Bible character into this is we could see like, you know, we could see, look at Jonah, who got a commission, a great commission, and ignored it and ran away.
Yeah.
You know, sailing away. You know, God did not forsake him, even though God was going to use him. He actually got two mission fields. He had a mission field of all the people on the boat
yeah.
who learned about the greatness of God, and then also learned something that I, you know, that the one part of that story that's always struck me is when Jonah says, "I'm the problem. I have disobeyed God. And if you throw me into the sea, then the sea will, you know, if you give me up, I'm going to give my life. Here I am. I'm surrendering my life. Throw me into the sea
and
everything will stop." And they're all saying, "You're nuts." And they start rowing harder thinking. And it's till they're finally worn out that they said, "Okay, well, we've got no other option." And they throw him into the sea and it happens.
Yes.
So there we see God, you know, is God angry with Jonah? Well, he's not pleased that Jonah isn't doing him, but he's going to bring Jonah back into the plan of God.
That's the whole thing, right? his actions actually restore Jonah.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, when we consider the anger of God, you know, and it's the lightning bolts of Zeus or whoever, those things are geared towards, let's wipe him off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
God does the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And just to show how Jonah's response, he ends up going and ministering, goes to Nineveh, wins people, and he's still bitter about the situation, right?
Yeah, it's like, the thing is I'm looking at that, there's a conversation that's still happening with his man.
Yeah.
It's like, even though the man isn't right.
Yes.
It's like, so do you feel like you are out of sorts with God, and where do you go with that?
Yeah. When we're difficult, we're dads, you know, we have children. When you have a difference with your child, you know, when they do something that's just, you see where it's going, you know where it's going.
Yeah.
You kind of have to take your hands off and let them do what they're doing. But at the end of the day, when you're sitting down having a conversation with them, your conversation is not motivated. It may have some angry elements to it, but the anger is you're losing this amazing relationship.
Yeah.
You're losing on an opportunity to be restored. You're losing on peace that could be had. Like, these are the motivating factors. And when we have our correction, we have our time, we sit down, our conversation is based on love. It's like, "Oh my gosh, don't you see that this opportunity is here for you?" And I think about the way that God is motivated. God's anger is based on his holiness, and it's a just response to violations against his character.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, that he just has this anger problem that he takes out on man, and that he, or that he's cruel, that he creates man, knows that they can't do it on their own, gives them an opportunity for success only to know they're going to fail. And then he just toys with us. And he's just, you know, this drawn out anger that's like throughout history. And that's not God's character or nature. There's no place in the Bible that gives the character of God as a manipulative, you know, angry, just a villain in the situation. Yeah. But God's love and his anger is kindled against things that are destructive to his holiness and his plan of peace for us.
Yeah, I think you just need to, again, you know, as he brings Jonah back into the purpose, Jonah fulfills the purpose. And then at the end, they're still having like some agitation with each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great mystery. Because being married for decades, both of us have been, we know that there are, you know, periods of time when things are
less than optimal.
Yeah, less than optimal. That's a good one. Yeah, I was looking for the right word. Thank you. That's a good phrase. It's like,
we don't even have to say why it's less than optimal. It might be us.
Probably is. So, the kind of thing is like, you know, we could like piggyback into the next question. Is God only loving and never judges me? Is like, does God, you know, is it love for God? You know, would it have been love just to forget Jonah and let him like sink to the bottom of the sea instead of bringing him back into his purpose? That, you know, God's loving initiation to his prophet was to have him discover worship in the fish and then fulfill the promise. But then, you know, Jonah wasn't quite right with God. And God said, do you do right to be angry about this? And it's like, you're angry.
Hey, yes.
Jonah, you are angry. And now, I was angry with you when you didn't fulfill my purpose? You know, that's the whole kind of thing. And, you know, I think that, like you said, the relationships are built upon a lot of, you know, not compromise. That's a bad word, but,
agreement, right?
It's agreements like disagreements or balancing. That's what the thing is. There's like, you know, iron sharpens iron. That's always a very good verse because there are things about, you know, there are things about your wife that are iron and you're never going to change them. But if they weren't there, your whole household would not be what it is,
right.
You know, and that's the way I've looked at that. Like as a man sharpens, you know, and then whose countenance do we look into more than our wives? And, you know, if she didn't have the iron she had, if she wasn't gifted the way that she was gifted, these are, you know, iron is like a natural ore in the earth. And, you know, it says something about the way people bring to what people bring to a relationship. So, you know, with Jonah brought something to the relationship with God. God was not willing to let that thing fall apart. And the same thing with, you know, with our relationship. So that's the way we have to think. Is God sentimental? That's the thing.
Right.
You know, is God operating on a sentimental basis that he's really wanting you just to flatter him? And we know there's I think it's Psalm 107 or Psalm 106, the Israelites, they believed God, but they only flattered him with their lips and their hearts were still far from him. It's like they were saying good things about God, but God was not moved by that. It's like, really? Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll just let you go along. More corrections coming up the road. Let's see.
Yeah. The can's been kicked down the road. Isaiah 28 says the same thing about, you know, their hearts, their lips drew close, but their hearts were far from God. And, you know, I think about this, the principle of agreement. You know, when Amos says, how can two walk together unless they be agreed?
Right.
It isn't compromise. You're right. That's a good, you make that distinction. It's because that's glorified scorekeeping. Like, we'll do it your way this time, but next time it's my time, my way.
Right.
And it's not right or wrong. But really what makes a marriage beautiful is it's two completely distinctly different people bringing two completely distinctively different aspects to the marriage that become one.
Yeah.
And you know, the end result is like what I was lacking. I mean, when I got married, I didn't even know areas of my life that I was lacking in. Mm. The marriage was God's way of complimenting me in those areas so that I could be complete, right?
Yeah,
so this union, this connection, this union comes from two very distinct parts and we come together and we're agreed. And I like that point that we, you know, it's not my way or your way, it's God's way or we're both in trouble, right? Because, you know, even though God gives us these, and thank God for these ironclad, you know, stubbornnesses in our lives, you know, we look at stubbornness as a bad thing. I think stubbornness has preserved us from some pretty bad things. You know, like we look at God's nature and character, and when we're stubborn in that, we're going to be saved from things. And it might even be having to step up in our family and say, you know what, guys, no, God is going to be faithful. We are not going to panic in this. God is going to be faithful. And other times it's us panicking and our spouse saying to us, don't you have faith? Don't you trust God? Like, what is your problem? And both of those are complementary. It's an amazing thing. So I think that this, you know, that God is always good and, you know, never wants to punish me, or he's always angry and all he wants to do is punish me, are both huge lacking of understanding what is the character and nature of God. And this is where
your engagement, the engagement is there. It's like, now I know that Jesus says something pretty strong. I believe it's in the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe it's later in Matthew. But he says that there will be, you know, the sheep and the goats. Mm. And he says, he'll say to some people, depart from me, I never knew you. And, you know, that seems very strong.
Mm.
But that will be a choice.
Yeah.
You know, that will be a choice, you know.
Back to free volition.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis famously talked about that with that allegory that he wrote. Very good novel. You don't build theology on the novel, The Great Divorce, but you get an understanding of what he's saying is like, you know, hell is a testimony to free will. Mm. And at certain points, you know, I never knew you. You never wanted to know me. Mm. Could have been that. And you never wanted to engage with me. I was, you know, constantly reaching out for you, calling you unto myself. But, you know, I wasn't slack concerning my promise. Peter writes that very clearly, saying that, you know, everyone wants to know where God is. Why isn't he doing something? You know, if he was really a loving God, this would be fixed. But God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to him in repentance.
Beautiful.
And how long that takes is his business.
Yes.
And so what you're saying, like, if, you know, you know, the kind of God I want, I think that's a, you want a magician, or you want someone who does magic tricks, or you want a technique I was reading a devotional by Timothy Keller this morning from Proverbs about that. We don't want to do the hard work to get wisdom. And, you know, developing wisdom is a character building process that could lead us through a lot of storms, a lot of difficulties, a lot of correction. Mm. We'd rather have technique. And that's the source of people. We want technique. And we're, you know, when you say, if God was really loving, I can't believe in the God of the Bible because, you know, a loving God wouldn't allow what he's allowing. And it's like, he said, yeah, well, you know, he gave us the power to choose. He doesn't override our response systems. It's like all of these things are, like yeah. you said, like Cain kills, God comes to meet him. Hagar despises her mistress. She's running. God comes to meet her. You know, Jonah runs away from the purpose of God. God comes to meet him. And yeah. then we could talk about Peter, too. He denies Christ three times, right?
Yes.
Does God toss him on the trash heap?
He does the exact opposite.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And this is really why it's so important to know the character of God. Because mm-hmm. questions about the character of God, without wanting to dig in and get the pearls of wisdom. That's such yeah. a beautiful thought. I never really have thought about that, that we don't want to do the work of understanding the wisdom of God.
Yeah.
We just want to have a presto, change-o, you know, fix my life, run my life mentality, and then we question it all. You know. And I, the thing is that if you or I were God and we were writing history, we wouldn't write it the way that he did, the way he no. dealt with Jonah, right? The way he no. dealt with Jonah, we're saying, you what? You're going to put him in the sea and stick him inside of a fish, and then you're going to have him spit up, and he's going to land in the place where you sent him in the beginning, and then when he goes to give the message, yeah. he's still going to be bitter, and you're still going to give him mercy. Like, none of these things fit the attributes of an angry God.
That's right.
Right? And when God is angry, and the purpose that God has for anger being kindled, it's kindled against idolatry. Mm-hmm. It's kindled against things that separate, you know, even the way he dealt with Israel in the wilderness, and then he brings them into captivity. All of that, those years of captivity, the way that they strayed from the truth, the way that they strayed from the way he told them to worship him. All of those things, at the end, it was always that I'm going to restore you. I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to give you a land. I'm going to give you a people. I'm going to give you. This is not the words of an angry, despiteful God.
No.
You know, this is the loving kindness of a God who cares and will deal with them. You know, the foundation of his ministry is truth and grace. It's not just grace. It's truth and grace. And truth has a consequence if you ignore it. You know, if I tell you there's a cloud out there that came from a nuclear plant and it's coming this way, and you say, oh, I can't see it, I can't feel it, no big deal. Okay, you made a decision, that's great, but you're going to suffer the consequences of that decision.
Yeah.
It doesn't change who God is in that picture.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think, you know, so this is a Grace Hour show. If you're just hooking in with us today online, Pastor Barry Quirk, I'm Pastor Steve Antrolonis. We are talking about certain lies people believe about God. One is God is angry with me and wants to punish me. God is only loving and never judges me. Those are the kind of things that we were talking about. What was I going to say? I had a thought in mind and I just lost it. Oh, jealousy.
Yes.
As opposed to enviousness. Wow. There are two different, people think those words are really close synonyms, but not really. God says he's a jealous God. Why does he not want, why is he angry with idolatry? Not because he needs your approval and your flattery and your love. Mm. You know, he does, you know, God is complete in who he is.
He is.
He doesn't need anything from us, but he does desire it.
Yes.
He desires a relationship with us. And his jealousy is driven by the fact that if you worship that, do you realize the, you know, what's it, what is the pattern? I read it in, I remember Pastor Stevens teaching it a little bit, but it is like when you compromise, when Israel allowed the nations that they were to drive out to be friendly with them and marry into them, and then you start entertaining their idols and their godlike, their godlike festivals, eventually you come under their government.
Yes.
And we don't really understand the prince and the power of the air at work there, right?
Right. Right, absolutely. There's a taking over that happens as a result of us voluntarily submitting ourselves to it.
That's right.
And this happens in every area of life. You know, we could say, I don't dabble with fear. I have a God who, I know that perfect love casts out all fear. But if I start giving place to fear, fear can take over.
Yeah.
And it can cause me to forget who God is. And the reactions in our flesh are real. You know, like I'm not saying that we haven't experienced fear. I had a unique experience a number of years back where I have probably in my life would say I was the least anxious person, you know, just for better or worse, I didn't let things bother me, you know, and I could never really understand when people were getting anxious about things. I was like, man, chill out. Just like God's real. You got to. And I tell you what, I had an experience where I lost some sleep. And in the middle of losing that sleep, I had this fearful thought that came in and I didn't cast it down. And the next thing you know, I had 2 or 3 days where I was just, anxiety was taking me over. And I really believe that God allowed me to go through that so that I could understand that there is a real effect of anxiety and not just to dismiss it, but at the same time to realize that there is a process of thinking with God that can help us in that anxiety. And, you know, we're not poo-pooing the need for counsel or for medication or whatever it is that we're not saying that at all. But in the midst of that, God would love to have fellowship with us, right? God would love for us to take our burdens and to cast them at him. Actually, he says to hurl them at him,
this
ekbalo, to throw down at his feet your burdens because he cares for us. He cares for us. There we go. He cares for us. He cares enough to discipline us when we're straying from him, when we're going to put our hand on that hot stove. He cares enough to give us the freedom to make decisions and to work through it. And sometimes, you know, just think about our ministries, Pastor Steve. If God said to us, listen, this is, I have a ministry I want to give to you. I want this result. Do it exactly this way. You'll get that result. There's no learning involved. There's no trust in God. There's no growing in our faith. There's no experiencing the joy together of having a team building excitement. It's just follow God's directions and do it. God does give us directions, but those directions have a lot of room for us to exercise our faith, to do things in a way that are going to honor him. But we don't know the answers. And how many times in our ministries we tried things and we go, well, that was a complete waste of time. But I had a blast doing it because God was in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I grew. And now I have my capacities larger. And now I can go somewhere and say, you know, oh, we tried that. Let's try something different. It's just getting to know the character and nature of God personally.
Yeah, really. Like, yeah, we are all good at this is like, you know, we like to line up Bible verses and get like, you know, we take those stories about David where like he's got a battle, you know, if I go into the city, will Saul come and get me? Yes. Will the people of the city give me up? Yes. And so David gets real clear instruction, but other times he doesn't get those instructions.
Yeah.
Other times he, you know, he's on his way to do some killing, Nabal, and then Abigail has to tell him, and did he listen to the woman? That's not God speaking. It's like, you know, it's like there's the Bible is like very, You know, it doesn't give you this formulaic way of doing things. We like to look at that.
They're on their way to Asia. Let's go to Asia. The gospel needs to go to Asia. It's a very righteous cause.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's no false motives. There's no personal, you know, it's like, I got a vision to go to Asia. I got a vision to go to Asia. You're forbidden to go to Asia, the Holy Spirit says. Wait a minute. What do you mean I'm forbidden to go to Asia? This is the entire crux of my ministry and my vision. No, you're forbidden. Yeah. And it's because he had something better.
Yeah.
And does Asia end up getting the gospel? Of course
eventually,
it does.
Yeah.
In his time. Yeah. Right? But it was his time. Yeah. And this is one of the most interesting things, I think, about being a believer, is that we have all these concepts of how it's going to work. Mm. And if I was left, you know, as I said earlier, if we were writing the Bible, I wouldn't be writing about all the shortcomings of myself or of man. I would be putting man up on a pedestal. You know, he'd be glorified. And look at what man has achieved. Look at, this is what humanism does, right? We are capable of achieving. And God says, no, your frame is dust. Yeah. You know, everything you do of your own effort is falls short of my glory. Your own righteousness is like filthy rags. But why don't you place your trust in me? Why don't you learn to walk with me? Why don't you agree with my principles and let faith reign and let the word of God become engrafted in you? And you'll see what a life that's given to God is. And we have relaxation. We blow it. We go home to our families. We're angry sometimes about things. We say something we shouldn't. We have to repent. Our family learns about grace, but because we are boneheads sometimes.
Yeah.
But God is in it. You know, God says, hey, at the end of the day, was the mission for you to be perfect without failure? Was the mission for you to walk, fail, get up, glorify me, forgive, mercy, have success by facing difficult situations in a way that I'm with you along the way? And I love that principle of growing in grace and knowledge of Christ. And that means getting discipline along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
It really does.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So when we get that part there, you know, the second lie, like God is a loving God and never judgmental. And I think we miss when I ever hear that word, like, you know, we have to take ourselves to the cross and say, all right, God committed all judgment to the Son, and he also put all justice, satisfied all justice on the person of the Son. To have this idea that we just have a cheerleading God, go for it, and a God who doesn't correct in any way, in any chastisement. Again, you know, we need to see that that's something that, you know, get rid of that. You need to cast that away. That's a vain imagination.
Yes.
And then if you're listening to that, this is like, God is going to allow moments of correction. He's going to bring that to happen. You know, he got Jonah back into his purpose by letting him get swallowed by a fish. And, you know, he felt near death at that point. And then, you know, and then he gets takes a ride on a vomit stream. So there we go. It's
it's like, God, what are you doing? God, don't you understand? He's having a bat. Look at what he's doing. And God's saying, yep. Yeah. And at the end of it, there's going to be redemption.
Yeah.
Right. And I love this point. I found this verse, Psalm 89, 14 says, righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne.
Yeah.
Righteousness and justice are the foundation. Now, his justice, you know, we have this question about, what comes first, his love or his justice. But we know that God is not sentimental. God is not temperamental. You know, God's justice precedes his love. And it precedes his love in a way that says, my character, my nature. And I think we can even get this a little bit mixed up, but I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. You can count on me. I am the only absolute in the entire picture. I'm the only thing that's never going to change. You'll never even begin to understand who I am in its entirety until we're face to face, because there's just so much about the character of God that we can't even comprehend it all. Yeah. But like, if we can learn who the character of God is and the nature of God and that justice, his love always directs us back to that. So, so his justice precedes his love. In other words, I'm a just God. Oh, you don't want to have faith in me, and you but you're going to be upset at the end of the game that all those decisions you made took you to hell. Oh, it's okay. I love you so much. I won't take you, put you into hell. Well, where's your justice? Yeah. You know, where's your character? Where's your, but it would be unjust if he had that justice and character, but he didn't tell us about it.
Yeah.
But the reality is we are well informed.
There's mercy has been extended to us, you know,
over and over.
Yeah. And I always come back to that verse in, I think it's Luke 3, you know, people, it says, you know, all flesh shall see the salvation of God. Mm. And it's, you know, when we see the end of all things and we realize that people will have to face God one way or the other, and we think it's, you know, was God, you know, just, mm. you know, it's our, we would say, was God, is it fair that God, you know, well, the thing is that, you know, Jesus said, you know, when you did it not to the least of these, you did it not to me. It's like, was this revealed? Is this revealed in some way? Mm. The other one is like, I look at Psalm 19 and it says the heavens declare the glory of God. And then there's another part of that Psalm that says there's no place where his voice is not, you know, is muted. It's like his voice is active everywhere. So we have to come to that conclusion that, you know, that God is loving and not judgmental, but also God is so loving that he's not going to override your personal accountability. It's like, you don't want him? Fine. That's
apart from me.
You didn't want to know me. So this is going to be your existence from now on.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's why pride is the monster sin, right? Because we can be so proud that we are not even willing to let God correct us in a way that'll restore us to his mercy and to his grace. And I think it's, you know, these lies are prominent in Christianity today because as I think you really hit the nail on the head with the devotional reading that you had this morning and saying that, you know, we want the wisdom without putting in the work for it. And really God would desire that we would have a relationship with him. You know, it's not, this isn't just, you know, we think about America and other countries in the world that are Christian in a sense, although less and less these days, but Christian in name, but like, you know, imagine we live our lives here on earth, just being occupied with everything that the earth has to offer and giving God a very small place. Yeah. But God he's jealous in the sense that he wants our attention because also he knows the other side of that coin is that if we'll give him our attention, we're going to really experience what his design for us to experience was, which is the peace of God, even in difficult situations. The salvation of God, both eternally, but also how about right here in the midst of our troubles, that he can save us from difficulty and from time. And even when we are stricken with disease or we are stricken with, you know, a difficult situation in a job or financial situations or health, whatever it is, that we can get to know God and we can have his peace, which passes understanding. So this is why we got to know the answer to these questions and why we're getting ready to start a new semester in Bible school. What a great place to get to know the character of God. We'll have a church service here tonight. What a great place.
7 o'clock. 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Moravia Park Drive, 6025.
Come on out. Come on out.
Yeah.
We'll have a good time.
Yep. It'll be awesome.
Well, friends, our time is up today, and we want to thank you for listening to the Grace Hour show. If you missed any part of the show today, YouTube and Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, you can find a full archived version of this, and you can listen again. Subscribe. We're thankful. We've had a nice run of people subscribing to our program. We appreciate it. You know, feel free to comment as you have there. People have commented today, and you can email us. And also gracehour.org is the program website. So for Pastor Barry Quirk, Pastor Steve Andronos, our engineer Jehu, we want to wish you a great Wednesday afternoon, and tune in again to the Grace Hour show. God bless.